Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey is here, and you set up today's column in a way that I love because, you know, I love jokes.
Yeah.
And you set this up like a joke to begin the column today. The column's titled, Pension Benefits Not All Feds Are Created Equal, Three GS7s Go Out to Dinner.
Yeah, I wanted to say walk into a bar, but I think we're overdoing that. But, yeah, the idea was you have three GS7s who go out to dinner. The etiquette requires that the highest paid person pays.
Yeah.
One was hired in 2012, one was hired in 2013, and one was hired this year in 2014.
Yes.
Well, you wouldn't think there'd be that much differential. There might have been a within grade pay raise or even two in that, but otherwise pay's been frozen. This year they got a whopping 1% pay raise. So who pays? And the answer is the senior one, the one hired in 2012,
mm-hmm.
because he or she pays a much smaller contribution to their FERS retirement system than the other two. What we have now, we have, and I forget the numbers, I think one is 0.8%, one is
3.1%, your column says, for the Fed hired in 2013, and the employee hired this year pays 4.4%.
Right, and then the other one pays 0.8.
Uh-huh.
So that deduction, and that's a lifetime permanent deduction every 2 weeks. So one is making 4% more than the others right out of the starting block.
That's interesting the way you slice this because you're right. Despite the three-year pay freeze and this year's tiny 1% raise, the 2012 model makes more money than the other two. Even during the pay freeze, you write, the 2012 Fed would most likely have gotten a 3% within grade raise on his or her first anniversary on the job and another 3% on the second. That's the dirty little secret about the pay freeze,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And it's why when you talk about a pay freeze, it really isn't a pay freeze. It's a pay raise freeze.
Uh-huh.
They've hit the amount of it. And it's a good thing nobody made a big point of this. The Federal Times wrote an excellent piece maybe a year or so ago about how many people got raises during the freeze, and it was this huge number. It was in the hundreds of thousands who got 3 and in some cases 6% raises while there was a pay freeze going on. But the good news is hardly anybody knows about it. Most federal workers, it's just part of the job. They don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even consider it as a raise, although they take it. But fortunately for them, the politicians don't know that.
Now, Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here, and the federal pay raise is yet to be determined for this year. Interestingly, in the National Defense Authorization Act, the House Armed Services Committee passed, at least in the at the subcommittee level, on a 1% increase for military members and civilians. That's going to be worked out likely this week in the full committee with amendments and so on as that bill gets marked up. But so we're still kind of in the fog as far as what might be happening this year.
It's guesswork. You have a 3.3% proposal out there that was introduced by a group of Washington area Democratic members of the House. That for whatever reason, they either didn't invite or they didn't have any Republican supporters, which I find strange because Frank Wolf has always been a great friend of federal workers. He's retiring this term, and my assumption is he wasn't asked to be a co-sponsor. But be that as it may, you've got a 3.3% proposal out there, and the unions were hopeful, but from what I'm hearing from people, and again, this is all guesswork. In some cases, it's not even very educated guesswork, but most people are now saying that feds will be lucky to get 1%.
It's interesting because initially the administration asked for 1%.
Right.
And the union said, that stinks, mm-hmm. that's a no-go, that's not good enough. And the unions collaborated with the members of Congress on this 3.3% raise. And Colin Kelly was on the program a while back to defend it and made a pretty eloquent case as to why that's the right number. And I asked her at that time, would you expect to actually see something in between 1 and 3.3? And she said, well, you know, mm-hmm. this is the way this town works, that stuff.
Yeah.
If we don't get 3.3, we won't be happy. But
and there's not much between 1 and 3.
Yeah, 3. yeah, you start to run out of numbers
yeah.
after a while.
Yeah.
Although you can string that decimal
yeah.
out pretty far.
Well,
when
the,
it gets
the
down
interesting thing about the 3.3, and I know nothing about how it was arrived at.
Yeah.
I know the rationale behind it. But the thing, if you want to have credibility in D.C., you make the numbers exact.
Yeah.
You know, 1,622, 418.
That's
that
right.
Kind of thing. You don't ever round it off.
It is Public Service Recognition Week this week. We're kicking it off today.
You know,
actually, yesterday, technically, they
you know
today
why
is the first
I can't believe
day.
It? The reason I can't believe it is it's not raining. And every year that I can recall, they've had a major rain or two, and it is, of course, beautiful out there today, at least here in D.C.
We are going to probably get some rain later in the week, though.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If there's
a papier-mâché day,
yeah.
Then it will rain.
Well, to be fair, though, I mean, the odds of it raining 1 in 5 days in the second week of May
is
pretty good odds. But the weather events that we've been through kind of lead me to my next question, Mike, which is here we are in the beginning toward middle of May. And although we're just at the beginning of this beautiful time, my favorite time of year in the city, because the blooms are now down enough that the pollen has receded. It's sunny. It's warm, but not overly hot and humid. But we're still just now 6, maybe 5 months away from the next potential weather event.
I don't want to talk about it.
I know. I know I'm a party killer. But it seems to me now's probably a good time to step back and say, did we learn lessons from last year, which was a crazy winter year, weather year? And should we apply those lessons now so that when October, November roll around and we're potentially facing some weather situations again, we can apply those lessons and have better outcomes than we've had in the past?
You know, that seriously is a great question. And you go back in history and you look at how this was done. And there was a point where they never shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a point where they shut it down if somebody even mentioned the word snow. And you had a situation, and I forget what year it was, but when they released federal workers early. I remember it was a very bad day. Subways broke down and everything, but they released federal workers early, and a number of them were on the 14th Street Bridge crossing the Potomac when that Air Florida plane crashed into it and killed a number of people. Now, you know, you can make an argument it would have killed somebody whenever it crashed, but it happened. There were federal workers on that bridge who would not have been on that bridge at the time had it not happened. And the fact that they were released early, it made it almost impossible for rescue crews to get there on the Virginia, the Maryland, and the D.C. sides of the river. So that was a lesson, and I think they made the decision we're never going to shut it down again. We're never going to let them go home early again.
Mm-hmm.
And they stuck to that by and large, but then there were a couple of years there where people would come into work, and as soon as they got to work, they'd tell them to go home, creating these massive traffic jams. And it's sort of been experimentation each time out. One OPM director was out in Iowa doing some of the pre-campaign caucus work for one of the presidents, President Clinton, and she got caught out there, and it was a blizzard here, and she almost lost her job because of it. So whenever I meet a new OPM director, and I knew John Barry long before he took the job, but I would always say, you know, here's this sage person, me, and the toughest call you're going to have to make in your entire career is every winter, the snow call. I think Catherine Archuleta, I think, handled it brilliantly this year, and it was all I could do not to become a cheerleader for her, because a lot of people don't realize this. If you don't live in D.C., or even if you do, maybe if you can't here in your 20s or 30s, you didn't grow up here. You haven't done a lot of walking in D.C. D.C. is a river city.
Mm-hmm.
In a river city, you are either going uphill or downhill all the time. We got some pretty steep hills. We're sitting here at about 550 feet right now above sea level, but that's the Potomac River is sea level, and the malls along the Potomac are at sea level. We have these heavily populated counties, Montgomery in Maryland, Prince George's, Fairfax in Virginia, and others, Howard. Montgomery County is very ritzy. It's home of Potomac, Bethesda, some very neat, she places. It's also extremely rural. It's a very hilly area there, you know, what some people would call mountains in it. A lot of the teachers in Montgomery County, because it is so affluent, many of the teachers can't afford to live near the schools where they teach at.
Uh-huh.
You have 100,000, 200,000 kids in each county going on the buses every day. So when they're not on the roads, the safety factor increases, you know, mightily for all the rest of us, for those of us who do have to go to work. And I don't begrudge when the government's closed, I cheer. I wish I could join them, but you know, we're in a 24/7 business, but it makes it much easier for me to get here. So I think she did a brilliant job this winter, and it was an unusually difficult winter, as you well know. We had ice storms and then snow and then ice on top of that, and we had everything and lots of it.